Welcome back to the third hour of Issues Etc., broadcasting live from the LCMS World Relief Conference on Mercy here at the Airport Marriott in St. Louis. Dr. Arthur Jess is going to join us here in just a moment. I understand he's changing out of his, as my daughter used to say, clerical wear, his clerical collar, into a tie, his evening wear. We'll get a chance to talk with him about the office of deaconess, a unique and ancient office in the church, an office largely of mercy and of service. It's beautifully with the theme of our conversations here from the LCMS Conference on Mercy. And then in the next half hour of the program, to round off today's broadcast live this Tuesday, May the 1st, Erin Bodie will be our guest. We'll be talking about a recording that she's made to benefit children in South Africa. It's a CD titled The Temba Girls with the Erin Bodie Group. Erin is a Max Jazz recording artist here in St. Louis. And did you know that she's got a brother who is a professor at the seminary in St. Louis, too? Were you aware of this?
No, I wasn't.
Really?
I wasn't.
No, she does. And she might be the daughter of a pastor, too, if I'm not mistaken. I think she is.
She is.
Her brother is actually at the seminary teaching something over there.
Did anybody tell Dr. Just that people on the radio can't see what you're wearing?
No, I just think he always dresses for success. He always dresses for the occasion. What do you think of the weather here, Jeff?
The weather is
looking pretty nasty out there.
Pretty scary. I'm glad I'm not flying out tonight.
Yes, I'm glad I'm not flying out either. We did that once, and then we didn't do it because the airport got shut down. The listeners may not be aware of this, but we're sitting in kind of a little atrium area, so over the top of us and all around us is pretty much nothing but glass, and we're watching the flags fly and the planes trying to land in these crosswinds.
Planes are pretty close to us, aren't they?
Yes. I would say within a quarter of a mile, we've got the first runway over there.
So how was your vacation?
Oh, it was really good. Okay, let's do this. This is how I spent my vacation, my week off. My week off was spent at home doing absolutely nothing, except what my wife told me to do, which was actually a lot when the week was all said and done. But I did nothing but yard work. I didn't think about radio. I didn't think about Issues, etc. Not one bit. I just went about my business, stayed home, and that's my favorite kind of vacation. You, on the other hand, went to Mexico. So tell me about this anniversary trip that you took with your wife.
Yes, Beth was 9 months pregnant with child number 4 in November, so we couldn't. That's when our 10th anniversary was, so we couldn't go then. So we had a belated 10th anniversary trip to Cancun, Mexico, like a little 4-day, 3-night, which really ends up 3 days, 3 nights by the travel. had a great time. You know how it's hard for me to relax.
Yeah.
You know, and
I was amazed you did not call me once during this entire trip. It was because when we usually go on vacation, I get called every day, even when we're not supposed to be working. But you didn't call me once.
You know, I'm a big high school basketball fan.
Yeah.
And so one of Edwardsville High School, which is the team I follow, rivals is Alton Redbirds. And their coach took a job at Centralia, and he's a very good coach. So we were elated about that. And my buddy Greg Shashek is a sports editor at the Alton Telegraph, called me in Cancun. He didn't know I was in Cancun.
No, you're kidding me.
I accepted the call on my cell phone. Even it's like 99 cents a minute because I knew it had to be big news. And my brother told me, he goes, I don't know which is worse, the fact that Greg called you in Cancun with this information or that you accepted the call with this information. So
it just shows you you're dedicated both to your 10 years of marriage with your wife, but also to your team.
It's the grace of God. She's stuck with me for 10 years. That's all I have to say.
Now, if anybody's doing the math and trying to figure out how Jeff, at his advanced years, has only been married 10 years, it's simple. He was a confirmed bachelor who robbed the cradle when he married. So that's how he only has a 10-year anniversary, and yet he's every bit as ancient as anyone else around here. Dr. Arthur Jest is our guest. He has arrived looking very snappy for a guy who just ran up to his room to change his clothes. You must have some place to be tonight, Dr. Jest.
Well, you know, we have a big conference going here and happy hour and banquet and all that kind of stuff, you know?
Well, he's looking great. He's looking like he's graduated from some Ivy League school, although I think the stripes should be diagonal if you're a Harvard man. I don't know if red and blue are the Harvard man's.
No, I'm a Yale guy.
Have you ever told him the story that we have female listeners who want him to read them bedtime
yes,
stories?
Yes, I think so. It's because of the beautiful presentations that he makes in his sound theology,
That's it. Definitely.
Well, Dr. Arthur Justice, professor of New Testament, dean of the chapel, and director of the Deaconess Studies Program at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. He's author of a 2-volume Concordia commentary on Luke, and the Concordia and the Luke commentary in the Ancient Christian on Scripture series. And he's a regular guest here on the program. He joins us to talk about the deaconess, the office of the deaconess, and it fits beautifully with the theme of this conference on mercy. I don't know how many times we've talked with deaconesses, with you, and one of the first words out of your mouth or their mouths when we ask what is a deaconess is the word mercy. How does deaconess go together with this Christian notion of mercy?
Well, you're right. This conference is perfect for what we're doing in all the programs in Synod in preparing deaconesses for the church. And I just want to tell you that I don't know if you remember this, but a number of years ago I did a program on Mother's Day for deaconesses. And we've made that into a CD. Did you know that, guys?
I didn't know that.
And we send that out, and it's one of the best ways in which we help some of our prospective students especially know what a deaconess is. To answer your question, I think one of the aspects of this conference is, at least from some of the things that I've been doing and others have too, that to make the distinction between the fact that the pastor is engaged in liturgia, liturgy, giving the gifts, and that having received Christ in those gifts, they go out into the world bearing Christ, and in what they bear in him is mercy and compassion. And because deaconesses are, in a sense, like deacons in the history of the church, associated with the diaconia of the church's life, which is the life of mercy and compassion, charity, love, concrete expressions of the gospel, in which people with real needs, real human care needs, are being served by women who bear, embody Christ's compassion and mercy by what they bring to these people. And it's not just simply addressing those needs, but it's the whole picture. It's spiritual and physical together. They bring Christ's word too. They pray. But they really do address the needs of people who are in need of mercy.
What is the scriptural foundation for the office of deaconess? Where would you go to answer that question, Dr. Jeff?
Well, I think in the past many have gone to Phoebe in Romans 16. And I have been, over the years of really listening to deaconesses and doing some research myself, I don't think it's possible to say that she's a deaconess, even though she's called diakonos. But I like to point to 2 passages that really describe the essence of the baptized that flows out of the service of Christ to us in the atonement. Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many. And that in his service to us in the cross, we now bear his service in the world. And that's what diaconia is. The other passage is my favorite one from Luke, where Jesus says, after the supper, I am among you as one who serves. And I think the Acts 6 passage, of course, where the deacons are chosen, I think that can be confusing for some people because that could also be understood as referring to the office of the Holy Ministry. But what I've been trying to do at this conference is say that if you're going to have the whole gospel, you got to have liturgia and diaconia. You got to have Christ giving us the gifts that flow from his suffering, death, and resurrection, forgiveness, life, and salvation, and you also have to have those gifts embodied in the life of the world. In the life of the world through us. And deaconesses and deacons have been the ones who have provided leadership in that area.
Why is the theological training necessary, vital, for the training and the formation of a deaconess who will serve? Some people will say, well, come on, she's going to be, if it's acts of mercy and acts of service, what does she need the theology for?
Well, what you're going to find in the work that deaconesses have done throughout the history of the church is that they have been deeply involved in its theological life. And that means that they are involved in helping people understand their sufferings in light of the suffering of Jesus. And in order to do that, to be able to do that effectively, you have to be incredibly well-trained theologically. You have to know the scriptures. You have to understand how to apply them in certain situations. And I think you have to be aware of the kinds of questions that people are going to bring you in the midst of suffering. I mean, one of the things that we have discovered, and this is, I mean, this has been known for centuries and centuries, is that both men and women are more apt to bring their problems to a woman than a man. And when they bring those problems need to be addressed theologically. And in order to do that effectively, you have to be able to have a theological education that allows you to deal with all those things. Deaconesses also teach, Todd. They are teachers. And they teach children, they teach women. I mean, there are many capacities for them to teach in. And in order to teach, you have to have the theological foundation. One of the other aspects that is oftentimes ignored is that deaconesses serve alongside the pastor. And so I think they need to know what the pastor does. And in order to do that, they have to be theologically astute. And I just said this in a sectional, that deaconesses tend to know better the role of the pastor and his identity and his office than pastors do. And even some of our students, they really get it. And they get it because they have to define themselves over against that office. And, I mean, I've tried it out, you know. I've asked, and you can just see the clarity of our deaconess students in understanding what a deaconess is vis-a-vis a pastor and what the pastoral's role is so clear and crisp. And it's a wonderful example of how, you know, sometimes if you run at it from a different way, there's a clarity.
You mentioned this a moment ago, but what is it about a woman? Again, we may speak in general terms here, but what is it about a woman that suits her particularly for this office of service and of mercy, the deaconess?
Well, Todd, I wish that you'd been in our sectional just now, because it was on women's service to the church. And Rosie Gilbert, who's one of the... she's the woman who's working with the Hispanic Institute here in St. Louis at the seminary. She gave an absolutely stupendous paper on this very topic. I mean, what is, and we use this language in our brochure, uniquely feminine care. And I think here's one of the ways to describe it. And this comes, you know, from women who talk about it this way, that the church needs, just like a family, it needs a father and a mother. And, you know, in order for it to really function the way a family should, it needs both the masculine face and the feminine face. And, you know, I think we'd all agree, and Rosie made a nice, you know, defense of the fact that the only thing that is absolutely necessary is the pastor. But in order to express the fullness of the church's life in diaconia and mercy in the world, having a woman to lead that and to guide that and to be a support to the pastor and to the congregation, to represent the church, you know, in her life in the world is something that women as nurturing beings are able to do much more than I think men are. I always like to use this example, that the pastors come with the gifts. You know, they come with the oil to anoint, they come with the scripture, they come with the supper, and then they go on. You know, they deliver the gifts, they go on. They don't have the time and not necessarily the inclination to linger, to listen patiently, to really solve some of the concrete issues that are often associated with people who are sick and suffering. Whereas deaconesses, as women, have that capacity. They can linger. They can stay. They can address those issues. They have that wonderful, gentle, kind, compassionate being that people naturally gravitate to as a place of refuge, a place of comfort, a place of consolation. I mean, pastors do too. I don't want to say that But generally speaking, this is part of their nature as women, as people God has given us as mothers in the world.
So to ask the question, what is it about women that suits them for the office of deaconess, service and mercy, is kind of like asking the question, what is it about women that suit them to be mothers?
Yes,
or wives?
I think that's right.
It's kind of a self-evident.
It should be. I mean, in our culture, of course, that's been blurred.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one of the things that we're hoping with the presence now of deaconesses on our campus, and I think this is going to be true at St. Louis too, you know, in male dominated campuses, that we're going to really be able to spend some time now talking about what it means to be male in this world, what it means to be female in this world. I haven't used this language until recently, but I think pastors are in many ways called to show men what men should be like. And I mean, I think they can help men be men and show them what the biblical understanding of manhood is. And I think deaconesses can do that for women.
You know, we encounter this on the radio as broadcasters, because you learn very quickly when you sit behind this microphone that your female listeners react differently to certain things, and they react to different things than your male listeners. And I am often chided by my producer making a joke or something like that, to remember that there are women listening. Not that I would necessarily offend them, but women hear things differently. And they interpret things differently. And you become kind of sensitive to this in terms of being a broadcaster, but it sounds as though the analogy you're drawing here is that for a young man who's training to be a pastor, he needs, as part of his training, to see that other aspect.
Absolutely.
Of as you said, what was it? Liturgia and
diaconia.
Diaconia, the two different kinds of service that are the church.
Right. And I mean, that comes under Luther's understanding of Gottesdienst. It goes both ways. You know, love God, love neighbor, you know. And we demonstrate our love for God having received the gifts in the liturgy, and then we go out into the world and love our neighbor as ourselves. You know, the other thing that is important here, and you're, I mean, having worked with women now for 4 years in this program and spending a lot more time working with women, oh, there's such differences in the way in which I read things and they do. And it's very helpful for me to have good women who help me see the way women read things, because I don't always get it, you know. Just ask my wife, you know. But I think the significance of women is that they can do this, that as deaconesses, they can also work with women. And I mean, in our culture today, as you know, and I'm sure you've had shows that show this, that there's just tremendous amounts of abuse of women. And for them to go to a man, a pastor, is so hard, and many of them won't. And I think there are also some very significant things that go on in terms of, you know, just entering into the presence of a pastor who represents Christ and sacredness and holiness, and it's very difficult for them. But women, in their femininity, in their very nature, are more accessible. Women will go to women and talk to them about these things, and the church needs that outlet. And there are a lot of really hurting, broken women out there who have nowhere to go.
One of the things that struck me about the office of the deaconess, as we find various deaconesses, we've talked with a lot of them, the breadth of their service in the church.
Mm.
I was just approached by one of the deaconesses who we had met before she actually began the program at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. She was there visiting at a conference, thinking about maybe becoming a deaconess. Now she is in Ohio or Indiana, serving 9 congregations, mm-hmm. different places. Must be on the road a lot. They, as you said, they teach. They work in hospitals. They do all sorts of things.
Right.
It sounds like they have to be ready to go out and do whatever needs to be done, whereas the pastor is, as you have said, much more focused.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely right. I think, you know, we generally train a woman to be a deaconess in a parish. That's our basic meat and potato stuff. But the magnificent thing about the office of deaconess is that it can express itself in so many different ways. And we try to help each student develop whatever it is that, you know, is given to her in a way to serve. And, I mean, the list is as long as there are human care needs, and they are, as you know, it's endless. I mean, counseling, elderly, children. We've got people working in crisis pregnancy centers, institutions, hospice, parishes. You know, I mean, the list is almost as creative as you can be. Immigrants, we're developing one now to work with immigrant ministries. I mean, it is just phenomenal. Disabilities, it's phenomenal, the possibilities.
How do you see the pastoral office differently, if at all, after some years now of helping to train the counterpoint to that, if we could, in the church, the deaconess?
Well, that is a great question, Todd. And, you know, I've only been asked that once or twice. And I think more and more now that needs to be asked. Because I think the pastoral office is going to be perceived differently now, especially if we are able to do what we're hoping to do, and that is really flood the church with deaconesses. My initial response would be this, that I think if a pastor has a deaconess, you know, working alongside of him, he is going to have somebody in his congregation who is going to be able to provide for him opportunities to bring Christ's gifts in places and ways that he's never probably even thought of before. And I think it's going to help him understand his role as someone who does bring Christ's gifts, and that those gifts need then to be expressed in the church's life through a diaconal ministry. I think all of a sudden he's going to begin to see the gospel differently, that the gospel is something that has to be concrete and embodied. Now, what it's done in our seminary, especially in our new curriculum, is that, you know, it has accented the incarnational character of pastoral care. It has accented the sacramental character of pastoral care, that the way in which Christ comes is always in concrete ways. I mean, it comes in word, it comes in bread and wine, but it also comes in a cup of cold water. It comes in, like the deaconesses in Kenya, with a little bag of maize or whatever it is that they can bring. The gospel comes in particular ways that are tangible and real. And that this might mean, you know, holding somebody's hand while they're dying. And I mean, it may mean all kinds of things that I think pastors didn't always see themselves as doing. I mean, they would certainly visit the sick and the dying and that kind of thing, but it was always an addendum, maybe. I mean, the big game is played in the church, you know, between the walls of the church during liturgia. But liturgia is nothing without diaconia. And for them to begin to see that is the case, that the full gospel has to embody both.
Dr. Arthur Just is a regular guest. He's professor of New Testament, dean of the chapel, and director of the Deaconess Studies at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. He's author of the two-volume Concordia Commentary on Luke and the Luke Commentary in the Ancient Christian Commentary on Scripture series. Thank you for being our guest and for dressing for the occasion.
Yeah, well, thank you. And thank you for having deaconesses on. And I really appreciate all that you all are doing to support deaconesses.
The
Thank
radio
you.
Voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
There's no shortage of marriage books on the Christian bookshelves. The problem is many of them provide nothing more than moral principles for improving your marriage. In this way, these Christian books on marriage are little better than the secular books on marriage. Marriage is Like Dancing is the Issues, Etc. book of the month for April. And this marriage book is different. This marriage book is Christ-centered, cross-focused. You can find Marriage is Like Dancing at either of Concordia Publishing House's two locations in the St. Louis area, 3558 South Jefferson in the city, or on the campus of Concordia Seminary in Clayton. The book is called Marriage is Like Dancing. It's our Issues, Etc. book of the month for April. Those two addresses, 3558 South Jefferson in the city, or on the campus of Concordia Seminary in Clayton. Look for the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April. Marriage is like dancing.
The Hebrew language, did it change meaning? Answers with Ken Ham, whose ministry is finishing a large creation museum and planetarium near Cincinnati, Ohio. Ken, we know that English words can change meaning over the years, so is it possible that the meaning of Hebrew words have changed over time too? So can we even trust the definitions we use today?
You know, a man called me to say that we can't insist that God created everything in six literal days. He said that the Hebrew word for day in the first chapter of Genesis may have changed meaning. Therefore, it may not have meant a literal day when it was first used. Well, I explained that if this was so, and using his logic, it would be possible that almost every word in the Bible has changed meaning. Thus, you wouldn't be able to trust anything written in God's word. Compared to modern English, the Hebrew language and other ancient languages are relatively stable. And also the scribes painstakingly copied the scriptures over the years, and I'm sure they would have made special note if a word had drastically changed meaning. The Hebrew word for day in the context of Genesis chapter 1 means an ordinary day. God created everything in six 24-hour days. It's sad that so many Christians will try anything not to believe what the Bible makes so obvious.
Believing in a six-day creation is actually foundational to the rest of Scripture. That's one of the eye-opening topics of Ken's free booklet, The Seven Seas of History. It's also one of the major themes covered in our Creation Museum to open later this month. Find out more at AnswersRadio.com.
Sign on at 7 for inspiration, information, compelling Christian conversation on The Morning Show on AM 850 KFUO. Wednesday, we will feature our CPH Book of the Week. We'll start the day with a devotional from Dr. Reed Lessing. We hope to hear from the absent-minded professor, Dr. Bob Weiss, professor of bioethics at Concordia Seminary. Plus, we'll tell you about the great work being done through Wings of Hope on The Morning Show Wednesday on AM 850 KFUO. Get ready, get set, and go to Forest Park for the 12th Annual Family Walk with Run to benefit Lutheran Family and Children's Services. It's happening Saturday, May 12th on the Upper Muni parking lot. Now, this wonderful event boasts a 3-mile kid-friendly walk route, 5K competitive run, family game arena for preteens, teens, and parents, and a children's corner. Registration is $25 for the LFCS Family Walk, Saturday, May 12th.
Your church will get the recognition it deserves when it becomes our next AM 850 KFUO Church of the Week. By becoming a Church of the Week, we help support your congregation's outreach and missions with daily announcements about your church throughout the week. For 8 decades, AM 850 KFUO has served the public with inspirational Christian radio. Give us a call and become our next AM 850 KFUO Church of the Week.
There's a story they told me, and I know it to be true. There's a story they told me, and I'll tell it to you. On the day she was born, her father and her mother cried with joy. She, the answer to her prayer, was finally there. She was born to a home filled with all the music ever known. She could hear it.
Well, it's the voice of Aaron Bode from a new CD called The Temba Girls and the Aaron Bode Group. We're going to be talking about this recording project to benefit children in South Africa for the last half hour of Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Welcome back. You can join us with questions or comments, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And our in-studio email address as we broadcast live from the LCMS World Relief Conference on Mercy, the Airport Marriott here in St. Louis in the last half hour, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Coming off of that conversation with Dr. Arthur Just, wanted to give you an opportunity to inquire about more information on the Office of the Deaconess. You can call Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Their toll-free number is 1-800-481-2155, 1-800-481-2155. You can also visit them on the web at www.ctsfw.edu. Aaron Bodie is Max Jazz recording artist and a vocalist for this new CD called The Temba Girls with Aaron Bodie, with the Aaron Bodie Group. Aaron, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Well, thank you for having me.
Tell us about that song in particular, the counterpoint of the two voices, but tell us about the story of the story.
Well, we were in South Africa working with the girls, and there was a lot of inspiration flying around, and we started writing some music while we were there. And we had just the chorus written while we were there, and we knew what we wanted it to say, and we had the idea to have Senzi, who is singing on the song with me, to sing the same lyrics but in Zulu. And so we had that much when we went home, and so when we arrived back here in the United States, we finished the song, and so there you have it.
So the CD, was it just an idea when you went to South Africa and then it came together, or was it something that you went to South Africa to actually record it?
Yeah, we were asked by Pastor Matt Harrison from LCMS World Relief and Human Care to go to South Africa and record with these girls who are so incredibly talented. It was the intention that if everyone could hear how talented they are, that they would want to do something to support their school. And so we knew when we arrived there that it was our intention to gather as much music and music as we could and bring it home and then turn it into a CD. So that was about as much as we knew when we were there. But
you said that the inspiration was flying around. What was it about your experience with the Temba Girls and with South Africa that was inspiring to you in terms of the music?
Well, they're very passionate about music there. It's a great part of their tradition. And they're so gifted that when we arrived and we met them, we found that we had this common bond, not only through music, but through our common faith, which, they're a Lutheran school, and, it's very exciting to meet people that live all the way across on the other side of the world, who you have so much in common with.
But they're brothers and sisters in Christ, even though you live worlds apart.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about the school and tell us about what the CD does, how that fits into the future of the Temba Girls in their school.
Well, they have a wonderful girls' high school and a boys' high school, and they're learning English when they start this high school, I guess at eighth grade, and so that was something that was very nice because we didn't have to worry about the language barrier. They were very good English speakers, and they have a wonderful school, but at the same time, they need some improvements to some facilities. A lot of the students can't afford to pay for the school, and neither can their parents. A lot of the children have lost their parents to disease or other things, and so they're in great need of help with tuition and with improving their facilities. So
the proceeds from the CD are going to be helping these girls, and when someone listens to this, they're going to be hearing, it's incredible to hear the sound of these voices.
Yeah.
The term that came to mind, and I know it's completely inappropriate because it's more of a Motown term, but when you hear these voices, especially in unison together, it's this wall of sound that is a force of nature. It's a great counterpoint to your voice, which is kind of crystal clear and able to thread through there. What was it like performing with them?
You know, it was just like when you get together with other musicians and you have that chemistry. It was really very natural. That was something that was kind of surprising to us, how natural it felt to work with them.
So tell us about the album itself.
Well, we knew that they had a very large repertoire when we when we arrived there, we listened to them sing a lot of their songs, and they were all wonderful. So we chose some of their own music to put on the CD, and we also brought some of our favorite hymns and spirituals that we knew we would have a good time arranging.
I know I've heard one of the hymns, but I can't remember what it was. What hymns are on there?
Well, we chose Were You There, which is a spiritual that a lot of us know. We also did Go My Children With My Blessing. And we chose one that was one that my mother taught me as a kid. It's called The Sun Has Gone Down. It's an old Norwegian hymn. And then we wrote the story song, and I think there's one other. Oh, yes, The Glory Manger, which is an old spiritual.
So we have
this
Midwestern daughter of a Lutheran pastor in South Africa singing an old Norwegian hymn with a bunch of the Temba girls there.
It's fine, right?
You know, I hope you don't resent this comparison, but the Were You There version sounded, when I first heard it, I was thinking, I don't know if you remember, I don't know how old you are, I want to ask you, but Paul Simon made an album about 10 years ago with a male choir.
Yeah.
And I think it was from
South
Ladies
Africa. Yeah, Ladies with Black Mambazo, yeah.
And the whole sound of it had the same kind of feel for me there. I hope you don't resent the comparison.
No, I know, he's one of my favorites, absolutely. Yeah.
We're talking with Erin Bode. She's Max Jazz recording artist, and she's a vocalist for the new recording titled The Temba Girls and the Erin Bode Group. If you have a question or a comment, we are coming to you live this Tuesday, the 1st of May, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org, issuesetc@kfuo.org. We're broadcasting from the LCMS World Relief Conference on Mercy here in St. Louis. So I've seen pictures of you walking around with the girls, interacting with the girls. Tell me about how South Africa struck you, the school, and the girls who go there.
Well, we were just overwhelmed by how wonderful they were to be around. We really enjoyed getting to know them. And really bonded with them. I think one of the most interesting things was that they had all the wonderful aspects of teenagers. They were passionate and excited about their futures and making plans, but they had none of the more negative things. They weren't volatile or competitive with each other. They weren't disrespectful, and it made it such a joy to be around them. And you know, obviously, we've really invested ourselves emotionally and spiritually into their future by helping them and hoping that, you know, they can be an example to the rest of the world for their school.
I've got a teenage daughter at home, so I know exactly what you're talking about. maybe we should adopt one of those Temba girls as an example to my daughter. Give her an example there.
Yeah.
One more question before, because we were going to play another cut from the CD as well. How many girls are we talking about here? What is the choir itself?
17 girls.
And do they sing and perform regularly as a part of their schooling and everything?
Yeah, well, they have no music teacher. They have no training at all.
That's amazing.
It is amazing. And amongst the 300 students for the girls' school, they have 18 choirs. Because they love to sing so much, and they just get together with each other and make music, and it's not only something they do in church on Sunday, but it's something they do for social activity.
Were you able to go to church when you were there?
Mm-hmm.
Was your experience like everyone else I've ever heard who's gone to worship with African Lutherans, that it is a mind-blowing experience worshiping with the African Lutherans?
It was wonderful. I mean, what was so nice is that, you know, I recognize a lot of the hymns because they were German hymns. They were just in Zulu, but Zulu is written and very phonetically, so if you can read, you know, for example, German, you can read Zulu. So you were able to sing along, and the pastor preached both in Zulu and in English. So it was wonderful. It was very, very much just a wonderful experience to be able to spend that time with them.
Okay, you mentioned this before. This is the one your mom taught you, The Sun Has Gone Down.
Yes.
Tell us about what we're going to hear here.
Well, my mom learned this from her parents, who my grandfather was a Lutheran minister, and they're Norwegians. And so this is something that she learned growing up and taught to us, and it's been one of my favorite hymns since I've been a little kid. So.
This is The Sun Has Gone Down. It's from the CD, The Temba Girls with the Erin Bode Group. That's The Sun Has Gone Down. It's off the CD, The Tempe Girls with the Aaron Bode Group. Aaron, you mentioned before that these girls have no music teacher, and I find that almost impossible to believe the way they sound in these recordings.
Yeah, they're incredible, incredible singers.
Is it part of their family life, their culture,
yes.
this singing? Because this doesn't come without a lot of practice.
They sing all the time for fun and for socializing, and it's just part of their life. So,
did you think that when you were singing in college, aspiring to a life as a musician, that you would be in South Africa recording something like this?
I was just surprised when Pastor Harrison asked me, which was just about a year ago.
You just had a concert, what was it, on the 23rd, if I'm not mistaken, at the Shelton here in St. Louis. How'd that go for you?
It was wonderful. Yeah, we had a completely packed audience, and we had four visitors from South Africa. We had two of the girls. One was the girl you heard on the last song there. And we had the people who run the school, Reinhild and Nico.
What are the future plans here? Do you hope to go back?
We hope so, and we really would like to maybe have the girls come here and do a tour to promote the CD. And I think there's really endless possibilities with this project we've been finding. So I think it'll be really exciting.
What was your initial reaction when you were contacted by Matt Harrison to do something like this?
I knew that my life would never be the same, and it was wonderful. It was just, I just knew that it was something I really would love to do.
Some people would say, because I know that you do, you're billed as a jazz artist. I know you've performed in Europe and a number of different places. In your what did you say, 6 years that you've been professionally performing?
Yeah, I've been working with the group that I've been with now for about 4 years. So we've traveled all over the U.S. and, like you said, Europe, and it's really fun.
We've talked on this program about there is kind of a ghetto mentality among Christians that if you're going to be a talented Christian musician or singer, you should be singing Christian music. Shouldn't you be singing Christian music rather than kind of the viewpoint that we advocate, which is the best music that you can perform and kind of serve within your vocation like that. How do you understand that, being a devout Christian and also a talented musician at the same time?
It's pretty much that. I feel that, I write music with our pianist, Adam, and it's just really what comes out of us, you know, that we write about. And I feel that, I want to be a good example to people. So by performing and, entertaining people, I can work that way as well. So
what are your prospects for the future? What do you hope for?
Just to keep doing what I love to do, really.
Is the life of a professional musician what it sounds or appears often to be? I mean, most people saying when you go home to your parents and you say, I want to be a musician, is kind of like saying, I want to be an artist. Or I want to be an English major or something like that.
I don't know. My parents have always been very supportive, so I don't know any other way. You know, they've always appreciated what I do and haven't treated me any different than the other kids. So it's been great.
So the hopes are to bring the girls over here, if possible, and let them perform their side of this. You recorded this with their part being done in South Africa and your part, for the lack of better words, being done here. Did you have an opportunity to perform together with them as a choir at any point?
Yeah, when we were there.
Yeah.
Yeah, we recorded everything together. If we needed to change anything, we did it when we were at home because we had the capabilities to do that. But for the most part, we recorded as much as we could there and then added some instruments that we didn't have access to while we were there. We added when we got home.
What was the best part about your trip to South Africa? What do you think you will? You talked before about your life never being the same, but what will you carry with you?
Just getting to know the people that work at Temba and the girls who go to school there, and knowing that through music they can really see a brighter future. I think it's a really exciting thing, and they have so much to offer the rest of the world. And I hope that people will see that by listening to the music and maybe seeing them in concert. And
what are their biggest needs over there as we wind up our conversation?
Specifically for Temba, they need money for school, and they need improved facilities. And, you know, I think just the opportunity to be able to choose what they want to do with their lives. And, you know, what they're being offered is a wonderful thing, a good Christian education. And that's something that is very definitely worth supporting.
We're going to be listening as we go out to Go My Children With My Blessing. Why did you choose this for the album?
It's always been one of my favorite hymns. It moves me, and I knew that they would like it too, so.
Were they familiar with it at all?
I'm not sure if they were, but we all kind of became familiar with each other's music through this, so.
You can find out more about this CD called The Temba Girls with the Aaron Bodie Group by going on the web to www.tembagirls.org. It's T-H-E-M-B-A-girls.org, tembagirls.org. Aaron Bodie is a vocalist, and her new recording, The Temba Girls with the Aaron Bodie Group. We're going to hear this last piece called Go My Children With My Blessing. Aaron, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you for having me.
Pastor Matt Harrison has been very gracious host to us during our 2 days here at the LCMS World Relief Conference on Mercy. I've seen him walk by a couple times, and he has gathered here about 350 participants and attendees. It has been a great opportunity to be with you as our listeners. We'll be back in the studios live tomorrow on Issues, Etc., and we'll be talking with you about a whole number of things. Thanks to Pastor Matt Harrison and his entire staff, who have just been doing a marvelous job here at the LCMS World Relief Conference on Mercy. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues, Etc.